Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. It is June 2nd, 2015. I'm Leanne Dolan here in Pasadena, California. I'm with my sister Julie in Dallas, Texas. Julie, I heard you unbought a house this weekend. I'm sorry.
Yes.
That sounded like a good, I was really psyched for you. Sounded like a good little spot, but not going to
work. It was a house that turned into a houseboat, Leanne. So I've moved on. But it's okay. But I do want to publicly thank you. You know, last week I came out to Los Angeles. I wanted to spend time with my cousins, with the passing of our cousin Ann Morningstar. And I showed up at your house midweek. And I just want everybody to know, first of all, Leanne has a fabulous guest room that you can stay in. It really is great. But the thing at Leanne's house, midweek dinner, it's hot, okay? I had this fabulous grilled chicken and then two sides with the dinner. I mean, who does that, Leanne? Only you, Leanne Dolan. So I thank you for all of your nourishment and your support and keep up the good work with those midweek dinners. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you very much. I'd like to credit the Satellite Sisterhood for providing all those cucumber recipes. We had the cucumber dill Greek yogurt salad again with the grilled chicken. It was really tasty.
Good. Very tasty.
Yes, that was a quick trip, but worthwhile. Worthwhile. Always worth it. Always worth it to just take a moment to pause in your life to think of someone who meant a lot. So, but we are moving on. We have a very full show. You know, it was the season finale of Outlander, so we'll get to it. But before we get to the darkest episode in television history, we're going to try to do some light stuff. We're going to lighten up a tiny bit. Oh, we got some breaking Triscuit news. The Triscuit juggernaut just keeps growing here on Satellite Sisters. Julie has an unbelievable story about what a doctor was wearing at a checkup. Personally experienced that. I have a new trend that you can watch for in your own Whole Foods grocery store, Julie.
Oh, I'm excited about that, Leanne.
Yeah, first to have it here in Pasadena, but it may be coming to your Whole Foods. The Economist, yes, it's a Tuesday show, but we are going to talk about an article in The Economist about men adrift. It's a cover story.
Yeah, it's all over for men. I'm really sorry about it, but they're in big trouble, Leanne.
And I have some issues with mandatory community service. So, whew. But I have to say, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about yesterday's biggest story. It broke the internet. The new pictures of Caitlyn Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner. We got a first peek at the cover of Vanity Fair, additional photos. I watched the interviews on Good Morning America today, Julie, with Buzz Bissinger, who wrote the cover story for Vanity Fair. I did not sign up for the digital version, though, to read the cover story ahead of time because I share a Vanity Fair subscription with my in-laws. So they read it first and then drop it off at my house.
Well, but isn't that a nice
thing? It's nice. Okay. But anyway, first impressions of the Caitlyn Jenner pictures. What'd you think?
Well, I didn't know who they were talking about at first. I was out of the country, Leanne, literally out of the country when Caitlyn had her big interview with Diane Sawyer.
Oh, okay.
So I was a little behind the scene. I saw the pictures come up on Facebook. I was like, well, who's that? Caitlyn. Is she some new movie star I missed? I didn't know who she was. Okay, so, but then it all fell into place. And, you know, if this is what Caitlyn wants to do, go for it. I have to say it's mind-bending for me. Okay, I just, the whole transformation, it's mind-bending. I think that's the purpose of that kind of cover and what Vanity Fair is trying to put out there, what Caitlyn is trying to personally tell people. And it's working. That's
minds are being bent. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, right. It is dramatic. It's a dramatic before and after of someone that we thought we knew very well. And, you know, they are all of a sudden there they are in a Madonna bustier. It's very dramatic. It's very dramatic. But I think that is the point of the whole public transformation and the Vanity Fair cover and the upcoming TV show and the cover story. I read that they're doing not a lot of interviews, but just a couple of well-placed interviews. Yeah, it's super dramatic. I looked at it yesterday. I had to sit with it. And I'm like, okay, well, I was hoping for Goldie. But all right, Caitlin's fine. That's fine. That's what you want to go with.
Caitlin with the C, which I think is...
Yes, but also with the Y, which is not the correct Gaelic spelling. So, you know, as someone with a Gaelic name, I feel like we have to hold the line. But okay, Caitlin, if you want to spell it with the Y, that's a lifetime of pain. I'm just telling you right there. That's not going to be spelled right. And I did hear today on Good Morning America, someone refer to Caitlin as a fashion icon. And I just think that's too soon. I mean, that's too soon, right?
It seems early. I mean, yeah. This is her first cover.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's really the first time, because in the interview with Diane Sawyer was, what was her attire? Was she wearing bustiers?
It was Bruce then. So he was just in male clothes. He hadn't gone through the 10, he's done 10 hours. Okay. She has done 10 hours of plastic surgery on their face and got the breast implants. So there was surgery after the Diane Sawyer interview. There was apparently a big panic attack like the next day, like, oh my gosh, what have I done? I can't go back. I guess that's very, according to a doctor I heard interviewed today, very normal that there's just this giant, what if I've made this giant mistake? Like, what if this isn't who I am? And, you know, with therapy, she worked through that. So I think it's still a long transition, but the immediate effect is kind of mind bending. It does take a while to sort of wrap your head around what happened. But I thought just the simple phrase, I'm free, was very powerful.
Yeah.
I think that's a very powerful concept. Yeah. You know, people reach that point in their lives at various times that where they feel like I am finally the person I'm meant to be. And some people never get there, and that's sad. So,
I mean, that's, I wish her well. I will have to say, as the oldest satellite sister, Caitlin's a couple of years older than me, but she's really kicked the game up here.
I know she has.
For women in their 60s. Okay. Okay. Because not many of us could do the bustier on the cover of Vanity Fair. Okay. Where we really got to, we got to work, you know. So,
and her arms are ripped.
Yeah.
I mean, they're,
and her legs are very shapely. So, so it's a very strong statement. Yeah.
Okay. Now to the cover of The Economist. I know it's a Tuesday show. We usually do lighter topics, but this article has actually come up for discussion amongst a bunch of my friends. So Julie, you brought this to the show.
Yes, I did. Because
give us a recap. I haven't actually read the article yet.
It's in The Economist. It's the cover story. It's Men Adrift. No family, no jobs, no prospects. This is badly educated men in rich countries. So it's not just the United States, but also in Europe as well, have not adapted to trade, technology, or feminism. And this is it's a long story, got lots of facts, lots of statistics, and it's happening, across the world in these rich countries. But essentially, men that, blue collar men that usually were heads of their households and had jobs, with the shifting of the economy, first of all, jobs that used to take like 100 men now take 10 men. Mm-hmm. So, that's a whole shrinking pool of jobs where you no longer need just the brute strength of a physical strength of men. So that is number one. Number two, men, they're not going to college as much as women. If you look at the rates of who is graduating from colleges, getting advanced degrees, it's now women are more than the majority graduating for college. So that's a problem. They're not getting trained in skills. And so that's it. In fact, in the 30 occupations expected to grow in the next, the next 10 to 15 years, 20 of those occupations are currently dominated by women.
Oh, so really?
Nursing, accounting, food prep, childcare, fields where they're going to be job openings. They're going to need skilled workers, that you need to be degreed in these fields. And men are not going into these fields. And this is where the growth is. And they are failing to adapt to this changing marketplace. You know, so it's a problem. Added to that, you have feminism, that women are out earning their, you know, earning their keep, Leanne.
Oh, they, feminism.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean,
I know, right. It's working for us.
Yes, that, you know, women are out there, they're earning their keep. They do not need to be married to, you know, to have a successful career. They, you know, they don't need to be married to have children. You know, more children are now being born out of wedlock than in wedlock. So the man's role in the home, the traditional role of a man in a home, has certainly changed. And women are just better educated than men. They're pickier. They don't, you know, they want to meet their match. And so, you know, they're less likely to be interested in men that have less education, less skills than they do. So, and then men, if they lose a job, let's say they lose a job because these jobs have, you know, disappeared, they've been consolidated, that men have a much harder time asking for help or using help in order to retrain. Hmm. Okay. Number one, they don't want to talk about it. Okay. Does this sound familiar, Lynn?
Yeah.
Number two, it could be any number of things. Number two, they don't want to talk about it, like in their relationship as well. So that it affects, you know, their partners or their spouses. They don't want to go to counseling. They don't want to go to job retraining. And this is where women really do exceed men in terms of their ability to adapt, you know, to go back to school, to get additional training, to go see the job counselor, to see the personal counselor. What's happening is we're ending up with like an angry group of men that are, you know, they're no longer needed in the home. They're no longer, you know, there are less positions for them in the workplace, and they are, you know, dropping out of the educational system.
I heard some statistics about the unemployment rate in Greece, for instance, amongst like men 18 to 25 a couple weeks ago. And there's a country that's been in economic turmoil, but it's like 80% unemployment for men of that age group. And you think, how is that even possible? How is that? What are they doing all day? How is that even possible? You can see how that would completely upend sort of a lot of things from their personal point, you know, from their personal self-esteem to, you know, the whole social structure. Yeah, so what's the explanation? So what's the fix, Julie?
Well, this is what I kept reading this article and getting more and more depressed. Like, okay, so what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this?
Because we're raising men. We have men.
Yes. So I know.
It's all we got. We are solely dependent on the men in our lives in terms of what we got. We don't got any daughters. Well, you have lovely daughters-in-law.
But yes, I know.
That's it. We just got the men.
We have the men. Well, the list of fixes is sadly really small. I mean, they said that we should now make the schools more boy friendly. And which, you know, again, it's like, well, wasn't that what the schools were to begin with? And then we made them friendly for girls. So now they're now not friendly for boys. They said they need more male role models, you know, so they need to see more male teachers. They need to see men
in the lower grades, right?
In particularly elementary school teachers. But that, and then, you know, and that they need more jobs programs and social outreach. You know, but again, this is the kind of thing that they're documenting. Men do not want.
I know, I'm laughing.
They don't want to go to these programs. They don't want to ask for help. They don't want the social outreach. So it is pretty depressing, Leon. I mean, the list of fixes or recommendations in this article is pretty short. And it's, you know, they're long-term fixes to say, okay, well, let's try to find more men to be teachers. In lower schools, you know, and you know, but what that doesn't help the men in the workforce now that are not working and are just hanging around. So
one of the aspects of this article I was discussing with my friend as we walked around the Rose Bowl, because she has boys as well. And one of them is struggling to sort of get through college. And she's like, I got to get that kid through college, because if he doesn't get a college degree, that is a very dim prospect for him after reading this article. But she also said there's just a general an unwillingness of men, if they, for instance, in the healthcare field where there are a lot of jobs, some of them are not glamorous. You know, they're bad jobs where you're in a nursing aide or an assistant if you don't have an RN, that women will just show up and do a job they don't like to do because that's the way women are built. We just get it done and then get over it. But men stop showing up. They just won't do stuff they don't want to do. Yeah, and I'm reminded of that every day when I talk to my teenage boys. Not to make light of this, but it is true. I see the direct line. So, well, Julie, I don't know what to say.
I think you have to support the men in your life. I mean, you have to, you know, you have to really try to lift them up individually. That's what we have to do. But it does seem like that this article defines a real crisis and the implications of men adrift are not good. They're not good for our society. They're not good for our economy. They're not good for our children or our future. So, you know, this is
more than just an equaling out of the sexes, right?
That's
this
correct.
Is an actual crisis.
Yeah. Right. That it's particularly acute in sort of blue collar men we haven't really, you know, put the focus on, you know, community colleges. I know that was a big emphasis of the Obama administration, and I really applauded that because I think it's a great pathway for a lot of people to get additional training and degrees that, you know, probably wouldn't, you know, that are, you know, wouldn't be good candidates for, you know, some other type of, you know, educational system, and that it's really helped a lot of people move, you know, get a, you know, climb up the ladder of success by going to community colleges. So they're really valuable, but it obviously starts much earlier, you know, and that if you don't have male role models in the home, you know, and if you don't see men around you working,
right.
I mean, I'll just tell you, Urban Nana in my winter in Brooklyn, I'll just say I'm calling it Sesame Street. That's where my granddaughter Josephine lives in Brooklyn. She lives on Sesame Street. There are a lot of like working age men hanging around on the street during the day. I don't know. Maybe they have night jobs. Maybe they have split shifts. I can't say that.
Could they all be screenwriters? Is that because that's what they're all doing here?
Liz, you know, we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do.
because
there are just so many fun things to frame, Leon, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leon, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift-giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we... We love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
That's what I guess everyone in the Starbucks in your neighborhood is doing. But you do see a lot of men hanging around.
Yeah.
And in the Economist article, they profile a town in Mississippi where only 47% of the men in the working age, eligible men that are, able-bodied working men, had jobs, and that's a huge problem.
Right.
So I think we have to start one man at a time, Lee, and one boy at a time. That's okay. All we can do. I mean, I was disappointed when I got to the end of this article that there wasn't like more of a platform about, okay, how do we lift men up? It is ironic that we have to lift men up, right?
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I think once people get over their resentment, then they will try one man at a time. But it is. I will put a link to the article in The Economist. I can see it's a long, detailed article. It looks like it's worth reading, no matter what you're doing, even if you're raising daughters. It's, it looks like it's important reading.
Yeah, because they're going to be probably looking for mates down the road. So that's important. They're going to run into men from time to time.
At some point in your life, you do. You have to encounter some men. Well, I mean, it's not a direct line, but this week we were in mandatory community service hell. I'll just say it. There's no other way to say it.
What happened, Leanne?
You know, I have long.
Who's we?
Well, it is for my 17-year-old son. He goes to a school where 30 hours of community service is required. And it is a big.
That seems reasonable, Leanne.
Julie, it all sounds reasonable. If they do it, it's not that much time to do. But one of the caveats of this school, because it's run by the Franciscan order, that it has to be, quote, Franciscan hours, meaning in service to the poor. So you can't.
Well, that's good. I like that, Lee.
Again, it's good. It's just not actually sometimes that easy or convenient to find service to the poor. It's generally things that are open for high school kids. It's usually food banks and serving breakfast and things like that, which is hard to do on a school night or week, school day. So it's entirely possible. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done it. I'm just saying that to leave it till the last weekend.
that's natural.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like doing all your summer reading, school list, like the last weekend before the start of school. Yeah, I can see this happening.
Yeah, except what happens then is that the community service becomes punitive, And for many years, I've been suspicious of mandatory community service long before either one of my sons was in a school that had mandatory community service, just because I tend to think the people that are drawn to volunteering and community service are people that are drawn to volunteering and community service. I'm not sure mandatory hours are going to rub off on any kid who doesn't have a natural interest. There are lots of kids, from what I can see, that have a natural interest in, you know, helping animals and sending bikes overseas to orphans in Kenya, like some of my son's friends. They've started a nonprofit and they're sending bikes to orphans. It's called Bikes for Orphans. And that's what they're
that's
doing.
Nice.
And they're genuinely interested in that. And from what I can tell, my son is not genuinely interested in helping other people. It's a character flaw. I admit it. I'm not proud. That he
but
doesn't
don't you think
care.
That the exposure to the community service
no.
might engender,
no.
you know, like a greater sensitivity of people that have, you know, less than he has
no.
and things like that? Not that he isn't sensitive to begin with. I mean, I do think he has this, you know, that the sensitivity towards others, Leon, but he
no,
just doesn't.
I don't think it has rubbed off. I mean, that's what I've seen with both my sons. It's been, they're both nice boys. Anyone who met them would say, oh, they're nice kids, but that's different than wanting to serve somebody else outside themselves. They do the stuff that they're interested in. They, you know, they volunteer for the groups that they're interested in, but that doesn't count towards this mandatory community service thing. So I did a straw poll on Twitter. Because he managed to get all his hours in, not without a lot of yelling and screaming and going deep. You know, one of the things, like my son's school said, they cannot use their hours over the summer. He did 100 hours of community service last summer, but that's not inconvenient enough. Like part of their ethos is that the community service hours have to be sort of inconvenient.
It is painful.
A sacrifice. So you can't conveniently do it over the summer when it's easy to make out the time and when you're not going to school and stuff like that. So long story short, he put together a package. He got his hours in. But I did a straw poll on Twitter to see, like, who's with me? I think the kids that are going to benefit from community service and that are into it are already doing it. We didn't have mandatory community service hours growing up. I mean, I didn't go to a Catholic school, but you did. Did you?
Yes, we did, Leon. We had mandatory community service.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't go to a Catholic school, but so, and it wasn't like a resume builder, though I don't recall it, but I certainly did a lot of it. But I just think forcing kids to do community service, and now it starts at crazy ages, like second and third grade, they have all these, you know, organizations you can join and you can win points and service medals. That all just seems a little creepy when you're 8, 9 years old. I don't know. I like the idea. Again, I like the idea of giving back if it's genuine. I think this mandatory stuff has not been successful for me or other people. It's the bane of our existence for some of us. And so I asked on the straw poll, only Professor Allen responded, but he's with me. He does.
He is. He thinks. Well, Leon, let me ask this. So your son, at the end of this torturous weekend of community service, how did he feel? Did he, you know, did he have any reflection on the people he was working with or anything like that? No? Any learning? Growth?
Here's how it went down. Because it's service to the poor, we had to do 3 food banks, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night.
And I love the word. I love that you're the pronoun we. Okay.
Well, we had to because he's not 18, so he couldn't volunteer at some of these. That's what I mean. Like, it's not actually that convenient. But you can't just, like, show up at food banks and start serving food. That doesn't happen, actually. There are many of them you have to, like, apply and you have to commit for a year. There are very few opportunities where you can just show up and work a couple of hours. So the two that we did, there, someone over 18 had to be with him. So that would be me because he's only 17. So at least I took his friend and we worked at a food bank in downtown Los Angeles, an amazing center that provides breakfast 6 days a week and then a food bank for other people, again, 6 days a week. And it was a long shift and we, you know, we got the produce and we put it out and I had to man the front table. Boy, whew, it was a lot of work. It was a lot. The front table was outside where they were, they had clothing and a few household items to give away, but you were supposed to do that after you went through the food bank. There were some rules. And so I had to be the gatekeeper. And I'm just saying people were, it was a lot for me. I had to come down hard, which is stupid.
Put down the hammer on these people?
Yes. I mean, it was stupid. But anyway, it was very stressful. But I said, as we're driving home in the car, I was like, did you learn anything, boys? Because you have to write a reflection. And his friend said, well, I learned that people don't want 1-pound bags of peeled garlic. Because that was one of the options.
That's good to know in terms of things that you really should donate, you know, useful things.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Leah.
But we talked a little bit about it. And I said, you know, one of the things to think about is those people had to take public transportation to get to that food bank. You know, what we gave them was $20 or $30 worth of produce. They stood in line for that. They got on public transportation. They brought their kids because they don't have anyone else at home to watch the kids. And that $20 or $30 worth of food is the difference between them eating this week and not eating this week. And so they both went, oh, that's good. We'll put that on the slip. You know, they have to fill out the form. So I don't know. Maybe it'll sink in, Jewel.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it was a lot. So yeah. I mean, I feel like everybody finds their area of interest at some point. Most people do in terms of service. I don't know. We got it done. We got it done. That's all. That's all that matters.
But it wasn't the inspiring situation that it was set out to be.
No, not when he leaves it till the last minute, and that's 100% his fault. It's 100% his fault. He had a million opportunities during the year, but I just think this emphasis on community service, if kids are not into it, is it's so not genuine. I don't know what the value is, but I'm sure that's a controversial.
All right. Well,
stance.
We would like to hear your comments, opinions about this.
I'm open to that. I mean, I know it changes kids' life, and I know there are Eagle Scouts and Girl Scouts that do like a million hours of community service, and then there are other kids that don't want to do it. So just like some kids are good at sports and some kids aren't, or some kids enjoy, you know, being part of the band, and other kids can't play an instrument. I think it's an option. I don't think it should be mandatory. That's the best way to put it.
All right. All right. Good. Good report, Lee. And should we turn to talk about Paris for a second?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because we why not? Right. Why not talk about Paris? Big news coming out of Paris that they have taken down the locks on the bridge. This is on the Pont des Arts. You know, they have all.
Oh, I've seen photos of that bridge.
You've seen this. It's very romantic. You and your lover, you go to this bridge. You've etched your initials into a lock. You lock the lock onto the bridge, and then you throw the key into the Seine. I mean, it's great. Isn't that? That's wonderful. But here's the problem. They have 45 tons of locks on the bridge now. It is undermining the structure of the bridge. And so they decided they're going to take it down. And they did this week. They dismantled where people have been putting their locks. And I guess they're going to put it in a warehouse because they don't know what to do with all the locks. You know, they didn't like throw those away, but they're no longer there. But I didn't realize that this didn't start. This started in the early 2000s. That this love lock movement and that.
Oh, I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I see. The first love lock started much longer, 100 years ago, and it's a Serbian tale. And I knew you'd like that of heartbroken sweethearts that pledged their love to each other at the beginning of World War I. But of course, the soldier went off to war and met somebody in Greece. And so there you go. That didn't turn out that well. But people do it in a number of different cities. In Rome, they have, you know, they put locks on bridges. Moscow, instead of putting it on a bridge, they have an iron tree, a metal tree. And people put the locks up in the tree and then throw the keys into a little canal. Canada, they do it on the Wild Pacific Trail land. And
oh,
people
that's
don't,
bad.
That's nice, but other people find it as a front to nature.
No, yeah, I'm not for that. I'm just as I've taken a stance against community service, I also like to take a stance against public defacement.
Yes.
I don't care what the intent is. I just, it's not your bridge. Get the lock off. It's not your tree. I'm not for it. I'm not for it, Julie.
You're not for it.
I'm not romantic about this. It's just public defacement. Yes. It's no different than graffiti.
Okay. All right. That's it. All right. Okay. Well, I guess that's pretty much my report anyway.
Well, how do you feel?
I guess I agree with you, Leanne. I mean, you know, it seems kind of romantic, but but you don't want to, you know, it's not, it isn't your bridge. You should, you know, it is, you know, you, and you shouldn't like ruin the Ponte Vecchio in Florence with your stupid lock, right? Or that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but man.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. Mm-hmm. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. Do I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled P-R-O-S-E, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS. Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your Butcher Box account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your Butcher Box on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
I mean, they're doing it in Atlanta, like on the Cherokee Avenue Bridge over I-20. I have no problem with that. You can do it there, right? That doesn't seem that special to me to pledge your love there. But apparently that's what people in Atlanta do. So, but I think if it's somewhere nice, okay, maybe that's my rule. If it's somewhere nice, don't do it. But okay, over the I-20, fine. Knock yourself out.
You know, Julie, there's a whole website called nolovelocks.com where it's for people like me. Free your love, save our bridges. Yeah. I'm going to sign the petition at change.org because I'm not for it. Okay. I mean, that bridge doesn't even look good. There are a million locks. It's not even pretty. It's just, it's not good.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, there's a whole site on where other lock problems are.
See? Yeah, there are other lock problems. And maybe we could solve that problem, Leon.
That's a great community service project. Exactly. Because I care about it. I could devote the rest of my life to people not defacing bridges with their stupid love locks.
Okay, right. Sister.
Okay. Well, good report, Julie. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Leon. I was trying to cheer you up after the community service.
I am a little testy.
Okay. You got some food trends for us
today? I do. This should make you smile. This, to me, is like the two worlds of our sister Sheila Dolan crashing together in one beautiful event. Because, you know, Sheila, though she pretends to cook, she really doesn't cook. She cooks like one or two meals a week.
She doesn't even boil water. She doesn't make a cup of coffee.
I know. She cooks one chicken breast, we hear about it for 6 months. I mean, that's just the way it rolls with Sheila.
She orders out tea. Yeah. Who does that?
I know. So she does a lot of grab and go meals. So one of her favorite places I know in Pasadena is our Whole Foods. Now, our Whole Foods is two stories. It was when it was put in a couple years ago, the largest Whole Foods west of the Mississippi. I mean, it's a dramatic structure. Sheila's talked about it quite a bit on the show. Pretty much the whole bottom floor is super expensive produce and yoga pants. I mean, this is a whole clothing department there. There are changing rooms. You can get a massage at the Whole Foods, and that's just downstairs. And then you go upstairs, and there are several restaurants inside the store. There's a sushi bar, there's a pizza bar, and there's a 50-seat wine bar where you can have wine and beer. And, you know, there are bands that play at our Whole Foods on Saturday night and singles groups that meet there. So when you're...
It's a lifestyle, right?
It is. I mean, that's what they want. They want it to be... You know, where you go on Saturday night for a good time. And when your son was in town, Julie, they were looking for the Whole Foods. They thought they'd stop by and pick up dinner, and their phones were dead, so they couldn't find it. I'm like, you would have never gotten out of our Whole Foods. It's so big and it's so overwhelming. But in between all the yoga pants and the massage therapy and the wine bars, it's actually hard to find the food in that Whole Foods. So I heard a report last night that the Whole Foods in Pasadena is the first to do this in the country. They now have a full slate of stand-up comedians actually performing at the Whole Foods. Sheila can like go do a set, get a massage, pick up some yoga pants and some expensive body spray, and then get her grab and go meal. That is the two worlds of Sheila Dolan meeting. She's been wanting to sort of get back up on stage and do more material with her stand-up. And now they're doing stand-up at the Whole Foods right up the street.
Well, does it kind of work like the subway in New York where you just start talking or yelling like in the produce aisle or something like that? Or what? Do you have to sign up?
No, they have a booker who books the sets. It's like three comedians a night. And, you know, they said Los Angeles, it's the resurgence of a golden age of stand-up. It's going to be like the 90s and stand-up's happening all over LA now, even in the Whole Foods. So they interviewed the booker on the radio and she's booking three comedians a night. There is no pay, but for Sheila, even more importantly, you get a free meal and a Whole Foods gift card.
Now you're talking. This is right up Sheila's alley. You're exactly right. I mean, she should do that.
I know she should do it. I know. Yeah. I'm serious. I think this is it. I think she would really, I think she would kill at the Whole Foods because a lot of her material is Whole Foods related and you have to keep it clean. Nothing blue. So because it's all foods. Because there might be a kid in the cheese department who hears you. So there you go. I'm going to check more into this. I feel like that is a good venue for her.
I think you should deputize Sheila, deputize yourself as Sheila's agent.
Yeah.
And just book her right in there. That would be fun.
Okay. So there you go. Look for that. And then, of course, a follow-up on the Triscuits. We have done many Triscuit stories on the air just because they continue to come at us at a breakneck speed. Last week, you reported on the show, Julie, on Martha Stewart's new Triscuit flavor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is inexplicably sea salt and toasted coconut, right?
Yeah. Coconut's going to be big, Leon. That's what we figured out.
Coconut is polarizing, though. People who do... I mean, it is. It's polarizing. If you don't like coconut, you do not like coconut. You know, it's not like everyone loves salt, but not a lot of, you know, people do not like coconut. I mean, like,
we've talked about some big issues on this show today. Socioeconomical ones, but no, coconut, that's the one. Polarizing. Okay.
So and Liz, Monica said she wanted hers to be salami dust, which is brilliant. That's brilliant.
And I had been thinking about mine because I wanted something Southwestern Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
So I want Hatch green chili.
Nice.
That's Hatch green chili Triscuits. That's what I want.
Oh, that's a good one.
I put out a word to Sheila.
Yeah.
She said, it's a really big question, is what she wrote back. I was like, really? It's just a Triscuit flavor. So she was going to think about it. And she has not come up with an answer yet.
Okay. So. Well, I was going for tastes I enjoy on the Triscuit to be baked in. So I wanted like lemon and basil or like a lemon vinaigrette. You know, I thought like a lemon vinaigrette cookie or cracker would taste great. But Liz mentioned that, of course, balsamic, that's her number one flavoring.
Yes.
Julie, that Triscuit already exists. Beckett put a picture up on the Facebook page that she secured some balsamic vinegar and basil Triscuits. I went right out. Like I put the, you know, I was reading a book for our summer reading book series. I put the book down. I ran right out. I got myself a box of these balsamic vinegar and basil Triscuits. But there are dozens of Triscuit flavor now. I had not noticed it because I'm so addicted to Triscuits. I just try to grab one box and go, like run down the aisle before I buy another box. So I test tasted them, and here's the deal. They really taste like balsamic vinegar.
That is such bad news. Liz will love that.
I know. They are very balsamic-y. They also have a touch of sweetness, even though they're less than 1 gram of sugar in each serving of the crackers. So I don't really understand. Now, someone on our Facebook page said she tried them. She thought they tasted like soap, which is not good.
That's harsh. That's harsh. Apparently balsamic vinegar flavors are polarizing as well.
Very polarizing. So, but I really enjoyed them. So I bought a box, I enjoyed them. And, but what I enjoyed the most, Julie, of course, they keep us entertained. You know, Triscuit has been on this roll to try to get us to believe that putting stuff on a Triscuit constitutes a recipe, right? Right.
Yes.
So a couple weeks ago, we talked about, you know, Triscuit wanted me to make a panini out of a Triscuit. And like, they wanted me to like.
You're the girl to do that, Leanne.
Yeah.
If anyone was going to make a panini out of a Triscuit, it's you.
And even me, they wanted me to like roast all these vegetables ahead of time and do this and put feta cheese on it. And then they wanted me to create a little tiny panini out of a Triscuit as opposed to just creating it out of pane, a bread. Yeah. So I wasn't going to do that. Well, Julie, on the back of this balsamic vinegar and basil Triscuit box, here's the recipe that Triscuit wants us to make.
Okay. I got my pen out, Leanne. What are we going to cook up this week?
It's multi-steps and involves cooking and involves Triscuits. And here it is. It's caramelized onion, pull apart flatbread.
What?
I know.
What?
So they want you to like caramelize the onions, which, by the way, that takes like an hour, really,
that's
to caramelize onions.
That's 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then you're supposed to spread the crackers with cream cheese. All right.
Okay. That's doable. Okay.
And then you arrange them on a baking sheet to form a solid rectangle. And then you just put a lot of like cheese all over them to bind them together so that you can tear them apart. But isn't that the whole point of a cracker? Is that it's a single
separate.
Serving? Yes.
It's separate.
It's separate.
It stands alone, Leanne.
Yes.
Yeah.
So creating a false flatbread to then pull apart, that's just so much work. And then on top of that, they tell you how to chiffonade basil. I mean, it's just a cracker, Triscuit. Don't get ahead of yourself. So anyway,
and, you know, just the engineering on creating a pull apart flatbread out of a Triscuit. You're going to have to put a lot of cheese on that. A lot of cheese. And it's got to be the right cheese. And you might have to put cheese underneath and on top of the Triscuit in order to get, because it could fall apart.
It could, yes, because it's not flatbread. It's a cracker. It's meant to fall apart. It's a cracker. It's just a single serving of deliciousness. It's not, You don't pull it apart. It's cracker. It is a part.
Well, now, you know, now I want to make this thing. Okay. I am going to go buy myself a box of Kiss. Okay. I don't know what flavor, but I'm going to make one of these things and I'll report back on that.
Okay. All right. There's my two cheese, my two food trends.
Okay.
Oh, wow. We're already at 40 minutes. So.
Yes, Malian, just quickly, because I know that, you know, you are always the student, always wanted to, you know, expand your mind. You want to go back to school. Well, I saw an interesting article about Scandinavian words that you could integrate into your everyday life. Okay. So that's. So I immediately thought of you, Lee.
Yes.
That I thought, you know, what you really need is some Norwegian and Swedish words that you can just toss around. Okay.
Like a smorgasbord. A vocabulary smorgasbord. That's what I need.
Okay. Well, the first word, Leanne, that I want you to work on is tradmord. Trad.
I think you should work on it first, and then I'll work on it.
Okay. And what literally it means is tree murder. Okay. Tradmord.
Tradmord.
Okay. And this is when you would say this, you'd come into your kitchen, your husband has spilled a glass of milk on the floor, and he's used 40 paper towels to wipe up the mess on the floor. And you would just look at him, put your hands on your hips, and say, "It's a tradmord. It's a tradmord."
Wow.
You see that? I did. Do you think you can work that in?
Yeah, that's okay. Like girl with the dragon tattoo. Yeah, that's threatening.
Okay.
Okay.
Then you're just, your head is spinning from the tradmord that went on in your kitchen. So you go out and down the hall to your son's room. And you take a look at that whole area where he has his computer and the gaming, you notice that it's you have a cable saw lot going on there, a cable saw lot. Okay, and this is when your cables are so twisted into each other you can't untwist them. You know,
Motor.
I think you've got a cable saw lot going on up in your office.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so what you really need, Leanne, is more orca. This is an easy word. Say it after me. Orca.
Orca.
Okay?
More whales.
That's just having energy. You have to have the energy. You have to have the orca to undo the cable salad. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Are you following me, Leanne?
Yes.
Okay. And then finally, Leanne, this, I know you're going to use this word every day because we do use the Google every day. That and that would be the Google bar. Can you say that, please?
Oh, that's a good word. Old Google Bart. I don't care what.
Google Bart. That's when you do a Google search and you don't get any results.
Oh, Swedish, Google Bart. Yeah.
Old Google Bart. So go ahead and put in the word salami dust, and perhaps that's an old Google Bart. Okay. Those are some good words. Okay. I look forward to hearing them in future podcasts. Tradmore, Cable Salat, Orca, and old Google Bart.
Okay.
That's Scandinavia in your everyday life, Leanne. I know you. I mean, you wear those clogs.
I do.
You should speak the languages.
I do. You're right. All right. Do you want to save the last one?
I'll save that last one. We'll do that this weekend. We have a burning medical issue, but it can wait until this weekend because we really do have to get to the finale of Outlander.
Yes, we do. First, I just want to mention, though, that this weekend, actually not this weekend, Friday afternoon, I'm going to be on Robin Call's radio show. It's a call-in book show in Providence, Rhode Island called Reading with Robin. But I think you can stream it live. I know you can. So I'll put all the information up on Facebook and our website and stuff. But she's always really fun to talk to. And just if you're a fan of books and she's a great conversationalist and interviewer with authors. So I will put links to that. You can hear me, but you can also hear lots of other writers talk about their writing. So I'm looking forward to that. Just wanted to let the Satellite Sisterhood know, if you're not doing anything Friday afternoon, you can stream that from your computers. All right. It is the season one finale of Outlander. Last week's episode was dark. It was a precursor to what would be an even darker show. And Julie, this is Sister Sasnak, the last one for a couple of months as we process what just happened at the end of season one. Were you ready for this, Julie? Because again, our whole premise is I have read the books, so I knew the brutality that was coming. And there was a trigger warning at the beginning of the show that there would not for kids under 17, that there would be nudity, there would be rape, there would be violence. But were you ready for this episode?
No, Leanne, I'm out. I am out of Outlander and I'm outraged, okay?
Really?
I am outraged, Leanne. I am mad. I am offended. I cannot unsee what I saw on this final episode. I feel terrible for our satellite sister, listeners that have followed on with Outlander, because I think they had to see things that they probably never wanted or to see, you know. And I really felt like used by the director and the producer of this show. I mean, let's just start with, like, this show is about, like, men in kilts and time travel, okay? Okay? And, like, some witches and you know, I was not prepared. And it was 45 minutes of the episode, Leanne, okay? I felt like, I mean, that, I was so upset about that. I mean, it was just so difficult to watch everything that was going on. And I just, you know, 45 minutes, we get it. Okay. I mean, when they kept doing it, I was like, no, I really felt like very used. As
you didn't think they set it up over the course of the season. We had seen. So in this episode, if you're not watching, and I know a lot of people are just listening to our recaps and not watching the show, which is fine. We appreciate that. So in this episode, you know, we know that Jamie has now traded sort of his life and the life of his body for Claire's safety, to the sadist English captain, Captain Jack Randall, who we've seen in the previous episodes has flogged Jamie nearly to death and really enjoyed it, has tried to sexually assault Claire and seemed to enjoy that. And now he's got his grips into Jamie. So the episode is a physical and psychological assault on Jamie's senses. It is very graphic. They do show the rape. They show other parts of the psychological warfare that Captain Jack Randall terrorizes Jamie with. They actually show Jamie branding himself, which I thought was the first instance of personal branding. I thought, really?
I lost my sense of humor, Lee. Yeah. I had my notepad, and in the opening scene, I did write down FOWS because we did have a full-on wiener shot.
Yes, yes.
But then it went so far downhill and dark, and it just stayed there. You know, there was no relief. Okay. And I felt like it was excessive. I really didn't feel. I felt like you could have communicated the same theme without using your audience and abusing your audience.
Well, you know, they did put the warning, so they wanted you to know that. And, you know, you are entitled to your opinion. So it is definitely, I read the books for the first time 20 years ago, and there are a lot of books. So I had sort of forgotten some of the details. So when I reread it last year before the series started, the first couple of books in the series, I had sort of forgotten how dramatic this was and how detailed it is in the book, and how, you know, in the book, it's a long portion of the book, both, you know, the torture by Jack Randall, but also Jamie's recovery and his coming, you know, out of his post-traumatic stress disorder and rediscovering Claire. That's a good portion of the last few pages of the book. So it's very detailed in the book. So I had sort of forgotten, like, how shocking it is, though. It is shocking. And I read an interview with Ron Moore, who's the series creator, and he actually wrote this episode, that they thought that they had done an adequate job setting this up. That, no. You know, that they prepared.
I felt the week before, Leanne, that, you know, that,
like, that was enough for you.
There was plenty of rape the week before that, right. We got it. Okay. Yeah. That we got it. That, Captain Jack Randall is, you know, is a sadist. We got it. That he brutalized Jamie. We got it. Okay. I did not need, I was really upset by that. And my husband, I made him watch it because I was like, it's the finale. Come on. It's going to be great. Oh. Sunday night, you know? And he kept saying where's the time machine? Where's the time machine? Could they just go into the time machine or something? You know, I mean, that was my only relief, was the fact that my husband just kept calling for the time machine.
Really? I enjoyed the Scottish monetary style. Like, I think that's going to be in the next Pottery Barn catalog. That was good. The spareness, the pewter, the wrought iron.
Yes.
The dove gray walls of the Scottish monastery where they were recovering. I don't know. I thought that was nice. But you're right. Yes. It was meant to be brutal, and it was brutal. It was, you know, if you read a lot of, well, I know you don't, Julie, read a lot of historical time travel romances.
No,
but
I don't.
Even sort of any book where there's a romantic male lead, be it a real romance or a historical novel or any contemporary fiction, where there's a strong, sexy male lead, to show him in that position with complete vulnerability, that's kind of brave and daring. So I know visually in the book, it just comes across as like, wow, now you really have to go to a place of understanding of their relationship and this character that we've nearly rarely been asked to do before in fiction, you know, in popular fiction. And so I think seeing it was much more difficult. Reading it is hard. Seeing it was 100 times harder, 100 times harder. And I have to admit, I fast forwarded through the last bit of the the Wentworth prison. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, and they should know that. I mean, that I just really feel like they misused the audience. I really did, you know, that they did not prepare us for that. And then they, you know, they had already made that point. So,
okay.
So no, I'm out. I cannot go on. I cannot.
You can't. That's it.
I don't know, Leanne. And then I was. But
they're going to Paris. Now they're going to Paris.
I was furious at that last scene. Like, I was like, oh, now you're going to give me this, you know, the boat and the sweeping coastline and Claire and Jamie in their arms together. And, you know, we're supposed to get back to this romantic time travel thing where we've been doing. Okay. No, I just don't know, Leanne. I'm going to have to really think about that because I was very upset by this.
Okay. All right.
I just want to apologize to anyone who watched it because we've been talking about it on the show. I had no idea this was coming. And I don't think you had no idea it was going to be graphic like that, Leanne.
I didn't know it was going to be graphic like that. Yeah. I had purposely stayed away from any of the articles. I actually thought last week, because I knew where it was going, I thought last week the implication, I thought we were just going to go to the recovery. I didn't know we were going to see it. And so, but they didn't have the warning in the beginning. They should have had a warning about that cattle too. That was the stampede cattle. That was concerning to me.
That was good. I was like Texas Longhorns in Scotland. What are they doing there? Saving the day.
Well, I had a lot of funny jokes, but it sounds like you don't want to talk about that.
I do.
Never mind. I respect that. You're entitled to be just annoyed and mad. And yeah, it did ask you to go places that you had not gone before. I think people thought it was like a romantic, funny time, you know, sweet time travel thing. But, all I can say is that Captain Jack Randall, even his body was creepy. Don't you agree with that? Like,
yes, Leanne.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, even that was just, it wasn't even so much a turnoff as like a weird, creepy, like pale body with like skinny, weird arms and long hair. Even that was creepy. So, well, I thought the acting was good. I thought the writing was good. I'm sorry it was upsetting to you. I guess I should have warned you. But, you know, Julie, I think it did a lot for Gaelic as the language of angst and misery. So,
yes.
If you want to express anything terrible, Gaelic seems like the way to go.
I think I'm going to work on that. I'm going to find some Swedish word to express myself, Liam.
Okay. Well, that sadly ends Sister Sasnak. Sorry, Julie.
It wasn't my fault, Liam. I was happy to go along. And I think there are a lot of other viewers that share my point of view. Like that, you can slap up that NC-17 sign, but that's not the same.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, maybe time will heal. And maybe by the...
We'll see, Leanne. We'll see.
Maybe by the time... Yeah, one thing they did not do in this episode that they do in the book is there is like a physical... you know, coming together of Jamie and Claire at the end of the book to kind of seal the healing. So they did not go with that. They went with, you know, the,
they had no time because they spent 45 minutes on the rape lean.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, at least it's not as bad as Sister Selfridge, is it?
That's a good point, Leanne. Let's end on a high note. Okay. You're right, Leanne. It's not as bad as Sister Selfridge.
Okay. All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. Whoo! I don't know. Wait, don't forget. Call your Satellite Sisters.